Hey, welcome to another Dev Workshop podcast, number 3. I'm your host, Todd Shelton, with co-host, Travis Foss.
How's it going?
And today we're going to talk a little bit about some tool sets and stuff that we covered in our last meetup group.
Yeah.
I guess.
Didn't run quite the way we expected it to, but I think it turned out better than we thought it would go.
Yeah, I think you're right. We got a lot to cover. So in this podcast, we're going to do things a little unusual. So normally we have some news and topics, you know, and stuff that we're going to cover, but I think we have enough news and topics with these tool sets to keep us busy for a while.
Yeah, a lot of this is news to me, so.
Yeah, I'm not even sure we're going to be able to answer some of the questions, but we'll try to make it work. So let's just give the user some brief overview of what the workshop was about.
Okay. So we pitched this workshop as a battle of the tool sets. We wanted to get 4 or 5 guys in discussing their workflow, how they use, how they develop for the web, and I was hoping to get them to badmouth each other and kind of figure out which was the top workshop or the top workflow. Didn't quite go that way though.
No, we had a lot of panel members cancel on us. So
yeah,
we got down, I think, 1 of them. Out of 5.
All right.
Yeah. 1 showed up.
20%.
Yeah.
All right.
2 had to work. A couple got sick. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you were right. So it ended up turning out to be almost like a round table.
Yeah. That's what it was in the end.
Yeah. Which kind of worked. I think it worked out pretty well, too.
Yeah. Everybody used similar things, but they all use also variations that brought out some things you wouldn't have known of otherwise, which was very cool.
Yeah. So in this podcast, really what we want to do is kind of reveal what we talked about at this roundtable discussion. We had a lot of people there, a lot of new faces this time.
That was surprising.
Yeah. And so we hit a wider spectrum of developers this time.
Yes. Than what we did have that system admin there.
Yeah.
Which was fascinating.
Yeah. So so some of the conversations that came out of it, we had one guy that was really big into the AWS, which is the Amazon Web Services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah, which is very interesting in itself, mm-hmm. as far as cloud-based. You know, and it's scary as far as pricing and everything. Yeah, you had a system admin in there. You had a designer, which kind
That's
of...
That's right, yeah. Forgot about the designer.
Yeah, that kind of threw me off. I was like, okay, why are
what
you...
What are you doing here?
Yeah. What tool set do you think we're going to use?
Yeah.
But even though that could be one of our topics later on as far as a workshop goes, you know what I mean? Like the tool sets for designers.
Yeah.
That, you know, so maybe he thought that's what it was. But anyway.
Maybe.
We're going to break down this list for you and talk about one of the most heavily discussed tools used amongst everybody, and that would be...
I'm going to guess Sublime Text.
That's correct.
All right, cool, good.
Yes.
I think, you know, there's also Photoshop would be a big contender there. Nobody actually said Photoshop, though.
Yeah, I think everybody really wanted just to talk about coding.
Yeah, you that's
know?
True.
So, but yeah, Photoshop, I think, as a developer... You know, I'm in Photoshop all the time.
It's hard to imagine life without Photoshop.
Yeah. I agree. And that's something that I tell people, you know, other like up and coming students or interns and stuff is, you know, even though your normal day job or, you know, your normal job is not to design in Photoshop, you still need to use it to cut up stuff and to lay
measure
stuff out.
Yeah. You're always going to be in Photoshop for one reason or another.
Exactly. So learn it out there if
yes.
you're listening. Either that or Fireworks. I mean, any, I guess, code editor. I mean, not code editor, but photo editor.
Yeah. The nice thing about Photoshop is it's just such an industry standard that most likely you'll have a copy of it and you'll be able to be productive in it very quickly. You can go out there and learn GIMP. That'd be great. But you'll have to go download GIMP if you ever need to use it on a computer, most likely.
Yeah. And there's some other ones out there. You know, but yeah, definitely Photoshop because a lot of the bigger studios they are using Photoshop, and I'm not sure you'd be able to open up some of those formats and some open source.
Yeah,
thing.
That's true.
So something to think about. But okay, anyway, on with the tool sets.
Back to Sublime Text. Yeah.
So Sublime mm-hmm. Text is now, if you don't know, is in 3.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's moved
expensive.
Down to beta.
Was it ever in beta?
Probably not.
I mean, he's been charging for it since I started using it, so. Should have bought it when it was $55, though.
I know.
It's like 100.
It's 100 now?
Yeah, it's expensive.
I guess I should probably go down here and look, right? But so one of the biggest things, so people did love Sublime Text for the most part, and I think that the reason why is kind of what I got out of the discussion. Very light, seemed lightweight, mm-hmm. and very customizable.
Yeah. Everybody would say, I use Sublime Text with these extensions, mostly. And so a lot of the discussion was, okay, so here's Sublime Text, and here are the special things that make it work for you, which is nice. It's nice to have an editor like that.
Yeah, and it is. So, if you've never used Sublime Text or you're just getting into development work, very lightweight. So one of the attendees was saying that he runs on a very old Mac, mm-hmm. and that Sublime Text runs really well. Hmm. You know, on that, rather than some of the other tools that take a long time to load. So he liked that aspect of it.
The other nice thing about Sublime Text is it is cross-platform. So you can use it on Windows and on Mac, and it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to, I use TextMate on Mac, and I use Notepad++ on Windows, and you got the same editor no matter where you're at.
Yeah, so one of the things, though, is Sublime Text by the developers of TextMate?
No, it's not. I believe that Sublime Text kind of originated out of the anger that TextMate was in this, limbo, where the TextMate developer said, yeah, I'm working on the next version of TextMate, and he never really got around to it. And so whoever made Sublime Text just kind of cloned it, made his own version, so it looks very much like TextMate to begin with. And then they've built on top of it from there.
Yeah. So, okay. Because I, during the discussion of Sublime Text, a lot of people was like, well, I did use TextMate. You know what I mean? So they were like definitely referencing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. So support. One of the biggest things.
No, it's only $70.
$70, yeah. One of the biggest things that I saw between, and we'll discuss this later with another tool, is that when you go from 2 to 3, it doesn't mm-hmm. move your packages with it. So if you,
mm-hmm. yeah.
So if you're not familiar with Sublime Text, what you end up doing is downloading basically kind of a, they call packages, which basically you might know it as plugins.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So same thing, but this is how you customize it and make it work in different languages, support for, like linting or something like that. So if you go from one version to the next, the packages didn't move over. I think that's a big negative.
It is a big negative. It's not too huge of a deal, I think, with Sublime Text because they're going to stick with those for a while. Like they were on 2 for 2 years or so. It'll be a while before they get to 3 or from 3 to 4, hopefully. I wish it'd just be never. but the nice thing is that, like, once you know what your packages are, really you only have to download one package to begin with, and that would be Sublime Package Control. So you download that, you install that, and then it's just a bunch of kind of like search command installs, maybe a little bit of configuration beyond that.
Yeah.
So it goes fast. It is a pain that you lose them and you have to bring them back in, though. I'm with you there.
Yeah. So that is basically Sublime Text, the positive parts of it. And the reason why we're talking so much about Sublime Text right now is because that was one of the biggest tools mentioned. But one of the negative things that I don't like, and I don't use Sublime Text, I'll tell you that, is I had to remember so many shortcuts, so many keyboard, in order to customize it, I really had to go in and start downloading a ton of mm-hmm. plugins that was already, out of the box. It really didn't give me what I want. And
what are you looking for in a editor?
So one of the things I like is, like CSS hinting and all that kind of stuff. So, and not just hinting as far as what kind of properties is available, mm-hmm. But one of the things is if I go ahead and set an ID in my HTML
mm-hmm.
and I start typing over my CSS or less or whatever to include that.
Oh, you want
to
figure out what that is?
Yeah, it automatically knows about it. That's not built into Sublime.
Yeah.
Somebody's probably going to comment on this and be like, hey, yeah, it is. But there's some other packages that it is. So, you know, WebStorm, it works, you know, and then Aptana does a really great job if you declare a CSS ID or class in either one, the CSS style sheet or the HTML, it recognizes that, hey, you've declared this somewhere as being a style.
Yeah.
So I just like that kind of thing right out of the box. You know, where I don't have to go, what's the best package here? Let me test this package out. Let me do this. So that's my only thing.
My major gripe with it is the lack of support for a decent FTP solution.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
Sublime, you mean?
Yeah, Sublime does not have it. They've got one that looks good. It costs an extra $25 because someone's like, well, I'll build one, but I'll charge you for it.
Yeah.
And it looks good. It looks like it'd do the job, but I really want that to be kind of built into the system by default. The only thing I've used that was even remotely close would be Dreamweaver.
That had the good FTP building?
Yeah. When I used to do a lot of the web development, I would have Dreamweaver set up. So every time I saved a file, it FTP that change up to the server so I wouldn't have to deal with any of that.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. I think Aptana actually can do that too. But we'll get to Aptana here in a little bit. But, yeah, that is, you know, for a lot of developers, that's important, right? That saves you a lot of time to FTP. Yeah, so Sublime Text is definitely lightweight. Ton of packages.
And it looks nice.
And it looks nice. Yeah. And it is customizable as far as Vue goes. So you can change the background, the text, and everything.
There's a bunch of built-in colorized schemes. So when you get bored with what your code looks like, you can change the colors.
Exactly. Right? Make it easier. You're getting old like me, you know, you can change it for your eyes, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, it's definitely an option to research, you know, and it is cheap, really. As far as if you're setting up a dev shop or something, you got five or six developers, you know, $70 for, you know, to use it. And it's very...
The other benefit of Sublime Text, we keep talking $70. You can go a long time without paying it. It just gives you a little pop-up that says, hey, you should probably buy me at some point. But then you just click, some other time. You have to deal with that four or five times a day or so, but yeah, you can try out Sublime Text forever until you finally feel guilty and give him the money.
Yes. I would highly recommend doing that, though. If you use it for development work or project-based work, you know, give the guy the money. You know what I mean? So I feel that the way about everything.
You're just looking at me like, I know that you haven't paid him yet.
I haven't paid him yet.
I know. Yeah. We should just go like halfsies on one and really just give him
$35 bucks. Hey, email him. Hey, would you give me, you know, I just want half of that. Right? So I want the light version. So so that was the biggest tool that we probably heard. And we're just getting ready to go down the list of software, and we're going to touch on all of them. The top one being, and this is not by any means set in any kind of importance or this was the next biggest one or anything. So we're going to list off these tools next. But let's just go ahead and talk about Xcode.
Okay.
So
I know nothing about Xcode.
I know nothing about it either.
You use it to write Objective-C to make Apple iOS applications.
Yes. And not just, I think, you know, the Mac platform in general.
Yes, and so, just Mac stuff.
Yes, Apple stuff.
Actually, no, I used Xcode a little bit. I didn't like it. Its colorization was kind of dumb. I couldn't really figure it out very much. And it very much is like an IDE that's very heavily targeted towards making Mac stuff.
Yeah.
So if you're in that mindset and you're in the Apple mindset, it probably makes more sense to you, but I was lost.
Yeah, I agree. I tried it a couple times and, you know, but I don't want to niche myself into a market of just iOS either.
Yeah.
So that's
the
reason I haven't put my foot forward to be like, hey, this is really what I want to learn, you know? So we'll talk about it. So one of the guys there, that's all he does is iOS.
Mm-hmm.
And actually he's an organizer, Taha. You guys probably heard me bring him in or talk about him at the end as one of our organizers.
Yeah.
But he loves it. A lot of these guys, they may not like it as far as like an IDE, but he definitely likes Objective-C, you know.
Okay.
And he comes from a background of Flash to JavaScript,
cool.
And everything.
Yeah.
But an alternative, and I'm not sure this is even on our list to talk about, is it? Let me see. Do you see
it? Doesn't look like it.
It does not look like it. I wanted to bring this up. So JetBrains If you guys haven't heard of them, jetbrains.com. They have an Objective-C IDE as well. And it's called App Code. Hmm. Have not seen it. It was brought up, but I just wanted to throw that out there since we're talking about Xcode.
Interesting.
As a tool. Now, the bad thing. Let's talk about... There's only a few things positive about Xcode, in my opinion. I'm sure it does a lot of stuff. I'm not arguing that. Mm-hmm. The bad thing about that is you're on a PC. No.
Yep, can't use it. You know? Yeah.
So that's a huge negative to probably half of the developers out there. And if you think about, like, people paying for a PC compared to a Mac, I mean, you double the amount of money. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that hurts as far as, like, using that tool. You know, I think as far as making, like you mentioned just a minute ago, though, it does do a good job of making strictly just Apple stuff.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's the only one that I know of that gives you a visual IDE for laying out Apple UIs and all that. So.
Yeah. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're not going to stay on that too long, right? So the next... Oh.
Vim.
Don't even...
Vim.
Why did you say that?
Oh, man. Well, at least we don't have both. We don't have Emacs, so...
I brought up Emacs, and the guy, I thought he was going to pass out.
Oh, man, he looked mad.
He did.
Yeah. So we had one guy there who used Vim exclusively. If you don't know what Vim is, it is a command line text editing tool. It is extremely aggravating, if I recall. Like, it's not intuitive at all. So it's the bane of Todd's existence, where you do have to memorize, like, every single keystroke to, like, enter edit mode, to commit edits, to go up a line, to select some text. They're all specialized keystrokes inside of Vim. Now, the guy who used Vim did give a pretty persuasive argument here. He said, all right, I've put in the time to use Vim, and he's old enough to, like, back in the day, he had to use Vim. That was the only solution for him. But I put in the time to learn how to use Vim, and it's everywhere I want it to be. It's on Windows. It's on Mac. It's on servers that don't have a graphical user interface, and I can just SSH into them and start editing things through Vim. So I give him that.
Yeah.
I give him that, that Vim is like knowing a magical language that gives you superpowers.
Yes. And not to mention that you're also working in, so it's since it is built inside the terminal or one of those. I mean, so you automatically, you're in that environment that is the most powerful for your computer, right? So, I mean, you can access almost anything from that terminal and do things that you can't do a lot from a graphical user interface tool.
Yep.
So, I hate... I shouldn't say hate is a very strong word.
Yeah.
Maybe Todd needs to learn this, right?
I strongly dislike. Yeah.
I spoke of myself in a third person because that person that learns Vim is going to be somebody else. I have tried Vim. I used it a few times. It's not bad, but just like what you said, it is the bane of my existence. I hate. I got other stuff to remember, you know, phone numbers, everything else. Not even phone numbers anymore. Who's kidding?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to eat.
Yeah, the only phone number I know now is mine. That's it.
It's pretty bad, isn't it? Yeah, I know it's number one on my speed dial. So Vim is very powerful, and they do have tools set out. So, like, on the Mac, I know they have, like, a Mac Vim, which is supposedly very similar or runs in that, but as this gentleman said, it's not close. There's some quirks about it. I've never used it, but
technically, anyway. Sublime Text has a Vim mode.
Oh, really?
You can hit a keystroke and it turns into Vim input. Yep.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
I think if I was just going to do Vim, why do I want to download anything else? I'll just open it up.
Yeah, that's my thought.
Yeah. You know one thing cool, though, that I want to do Vim just for is just so I can have it full screen and set the background to transparency with the green type.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It looks kind of cool, nice. Like a the Matrix type deal.
Yeah. Whenever I'm running, like, command line stuff, though, I just do that anyway. Just leave it up. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's Vim. Definitely try. If you haven't tried it, definitely just check it out because, you know, like a lot of things in the web development these days, this seems to be, as a hardcore developer, a big tool they use. Every time I see a really hardcore, what I consider a hardcore developer, most of them have Vim and Terminal up all the time.
Or at the very least, if you don't try Vim and you've never hopped on the command line, you probably should. And
definitely.
At least learn how to move around on the command line and enter some commands.
Yeah. And you can find those out there anywhere. So,
yeah.
Perl. Gosh, you know what?
It's a programming language?
Yeah, I don't even know why. That's not even really a tool, per se. They just brought it up. We just listed everything. So
is Scott... I mean, Scott was the one taking the notes. So is he so young that he actually doesn't know that Perl is a programming language?
Yeah, I don't think he does. But there's a lot of people out there that probably never even, you know, Fortran or anything like that. They probably don't even know any of it. Yeah. I mean, if you didn't... So I would say if you were not into a computer science program... Mm-hmm. You probably wouldn't ever hear this.
Yeah. The only reason I know about Perl is that when I was first tinkering around on the web, sometimes you get PHP scripts, and other times you get Perl scripts to run.
Yes. I don't even think it's spelled like that. I think it's...
You're right. You're right. It's P-E-R-L. Yeah.
It's not spelled like the Perl. It's spelled, P-E-R-L. Anyway, we're not going to talk on that a lot because it is a language. It's not a tool. The next one, I think Travis likes this next one, so go ahead and you talk about it.
Yeah, you're the one that told me about it.
Yeah.
So there's this new editor out there from Adobe called Brackets, and I like it because it is fairly lightweight. Visually, it's actually kind of feel, and the download and install size is fairly lightweight, though it seems to run very slow sometimes, but visually it's very lightweight. You got a couple, they're not even tabs, but you got like some files open on the left-hand side. You still have your kind of like wonderful project directory that has one working project. But it does some really cool things for a web developer that I've never, seems like you have in some of your other languages. But it does code hinting for JavaScript and not just kind of like basic ones, but actually compiles the JavaScript behind the scenes and runs it as you're typing. So if I type in something, it will infer what type of variable it is and give me a listing of all the methods and properties of that JavaScript variable.
Now that's pretty cool, really.
That is, I mean, Sublime Text doesn't do that.
Well, there's a plugin for that. It's $50. Okay. No, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
But like Sublime Text doesn't do that. But Brackets does do that. The other thing that I like about Brackets, although I guess I'm starting to move away from again, was that in my classes and when I'm being super lazy, I can quickly make a project on my desktop, put a bunch of files in there, you know, cut up some HTML5 boilerplate, put in some stuff. And there's this lightning bolt on the upper right-hand corner of Brackets. And if I click that, it will launch a web server for me and load up my project in a live web server, which means I can do things like test AJAX and loading in images at runtime and all sorts of things that I can't do if I'm just running on my desktop normally.
Yeah.
So it's a cool editor. It's nice. It's built in HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. It's open source, so if you want to, you can go in and edit it. I've been thinking about doing that at some point. Once it reaches maybe a more stable state, and there's some weird hacking that you have to do for it. But it seems like a solid one, and I hope it gets better as time goes along, too.
Yeah. Positives. Small. Yep. Very similar to Sublime Text.
Yes, yes. Drag and drop a folder onto it to open that in your project,
Package or plug-in extensive, right? So, I mean, that's basically what it uses.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar.
Yep.
One thing I did like about the Brackets over Sublime Text is that their new project management plug-in worked, whereas Sublime didn't. So, like...
I never do that. I just make folders and
just
drop
drag them on. Yeah. So... Yeah, so if you developers out there, so if you're used to the old, you know, go up, file, new, and new project, Sublime, don't think about that in Sublime Text. It doesn't work, right? So, and I think there's supposed to be a plug-in. I never could get it to work. But Brackets, it worked pretty well. And it does, one thing that the plug-in did for me was that when you do set a new project, it asks you, hey, you know, you want an empty project or do you want one that has jQuery in HTML5?
So that's cool.
It automatically brings in the CDN links for you already.
Very cool.
Yeah. Most of your projects, if you start off, is going to have jQuery in it of some sort.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so you might as well just do it. But that's one thing nice about it. Negative, same thing with Sublime Text. Doesn't move your packages over, and Brackets is still in beta.
Yes.
Even though a ton of people are using it.
And their releases do not overwrite. So I have 5 Brackets installed right now, like Sprint 28, Sprint 29, Sprint 30, Sprint 31, Sprint 32. They're all separate programs. So that's a real pain.
And I heard that they're really trying to bring this out of beta pretty soon.
Good.
That's what I heard. Good. I don't know.
It seems like a pretty solid program right now. Like when I use it, I wouldn't call it beta.
Yeah, that's I agree. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it does. Yeah, there's nothing. I have not ran into anything that
it's got that Google Docs thing where it's going to be in beta until like it's solidly in production.
Yeah,
and then they'll finally remove the beta tag from it.
Yeah, I agree. So brackets. Final conclusion. Very similar to Sublime Text.
Yeah. Thanks, Adobe.
Yeah, finally. Yeah,
it's interesting. Like, what is their strategy there? Why are they paying people to build that?
I don't think they are. You know what? This is one of their few open source projects that they've kind of made open source. So Flex was an open source.
Yeah.
Well, it is open source.
Flex itself is open source. The compiler is
not
kind of like documented, but not open source yet. Yeah.
But when so the Flex SDK was open source, but they never really let anybody do anything with it.
Really?
Yeah. So you'd put in all these, you know, you'd send in, hey, here's my fix for this, here's my fix for that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of people doing bug fixes, putting in, you know, and they never, you know, I'm sure they implemented a few of them, but it wasn't like a normal open source minded community where, yeah, let's go ahead and make it open source. But anyway, so very close brackets, very close to Sublime Text, made by Adobe.
Mm-hmm. It's got a real bent on web development, though. Sublime Text is kind of like, we'll do everything.
Yeah.
And brackets is like, we will do web development.
Well, yes. Yeah. So, you know, with all of these, you pick your tools that's going to, you know, you pick your tool that's going to get the job done. Heck, if Dreamweaver is your tool, get the job done, use it, I guess. You know, anyway, so moving on to the next tool, and this really isn't like a web dev tool per se, but I usually use the command line to do this kind of thing. So we're going to talk about Kaleidoscope. This was actually a tool that they used, which I believe, if I remember correctly, this actually merges files for the Mac. So it lets you compare files and merge them, you know. Which Windows does pretty well out of the box.
Does it?
Yeah. So it
shows you actual line differences?
Well, it doesn't do that so much, but like if you copy and paste one into another, it won't change the lines that aren't changed.
Mm, interesting.
You know, where Mac it overwrites it.
Oh,
you know what
that's bad.
So,
yeah.
So if you're trying to merge, it won't. But I believe Kaleidoscope does all that. But, you know, like anything, there is command lines out there. I mean, you know, you can type a command that'll do it.
Yeah.
You know?
But it doesn't look as pretty as Kaleidoscope.
That's true. Just their logo looks pretty cool.
It does. And, like, the actual software looks beautiful.
Yes. I've never used it.
Me neither. But I've seen the screenshots, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you can, you know, go down through there. And it is. I mean, so it highlights the differences, you know, and I think there's different kind of layout, so you can get text and you can get definitely customizable. So if you do a lot of merging of files, comparing,
wouldn't that be a terrible job? Like, that was the entire job, just to merge people's code.
Yeah, I would hate it.
You're the code merger.
what's your job? Yeah. Like, just merge.
Yeah.
That would suck. I don't know. I guess if you're doing a lot of collaborative work and you don't have some sort of version control tool, this would probably be the only thing you're going to use, right?
Well, I mean, it's expensive, and there's other ways of looking for differences. I think one of the other tools mentioned out there that we probably have in our list is Compare, which is for Windows. It does very similar stuff. And there's other ones out there that I think are free. And they'll do the same thing of go through and look for differences between files for you and merge them for you, with you making the decisions on each line-by-line merge.
Yeah. Yes.
But Kaleidoscope seems to do more for you and do it in a more beautiful way.
And yeah.
It's kind of that. One of my buddies is like, I like Macs because they look nice and all the software looks nice on them. So it's got that Mac feeling of our software must be beautiful. So Kaleidoscope looks beautiful.
It does. Really, the logo just, I want to just buy it.
Yeah.
Just for the logo. So let's see what we got here. Oh, accidentally hit the wrong button there. No, I didn't actually. I want to get that.
What was that other one in there?
So we had Kaleidoscope. I think the next two, I don't even know. The first one is not really a tool. Kind of is.
Yeah.
Git. So we're going to talk about GitHub and together. Let's just talk about it. So GitHub is the most commonly used. Basically, it's a website, you know, I mean, down to the most basic thing, right? Yeah. And it's a version control site where you can actually
host your versions for you.
So. Yeah, free.
Mm-hmm. As long as your repo is public.
Correct.
Yeah.
Cost you money if you want...
Private.
Mm-hmm. $7 a month?
I don't know.
I think it's $7 a month for... and I think it's limited amount of privates for that, for $7 or something.
Yeah, I think you get 5 private repos.
Yeah. So that's the bad thing about GitHub. Now, Git is basically the commands, the set of commands that that you use to... upload your project to GitHub, create the new repo,
check in your changes.
Yeah. Basically, you're just Git is basically all the commands to control your project as far as versioning.
Yep.
So you can branch, you can do all this kind of stuff.
It's much nicer than taking your thing and just copying the folder over and over and over again.
Yeah, it definitely is. So Git is. You know what? That's basically, kind of, in my opinion, the new SVN.
Yes. So pretty much is at this point.
A lot of people that are still using SVN are either in a big corporation that can't get away from it, afraid to get more of an... Because SVN, let's face it, there's a lot of GUIs out there, and a lot of SVN is built right into a lot of projects, a lot of IDEs.
Yeah, it's getting in there too now.
Yeah, they are slowly getting in, but I think that's why a lot of people still use it. But yeah, so Git's the new flavor of the kind of the decade.
The stopping point, I think, for a lot of people is that they don't realize, it was like this for me, that you have to make 2 check-ins, one for your local Git repo.
Yeah.
And that does one thing, but it doesn't actually push those changes out to everybody else. There's a second command that you run that actually takes those changes you made and makes them available to everybody else. So it's a two-step process if you ever want to push something up for someone to reference.
Yes. A good collaborative tool set.
Yes.
Just as long as with any version you control, SVN and Git and everything else like that. So just definitely check it out. Bitbucket is another site that is very similar to GitHub.
But with free private repos.
Yes.
Up to 5 collaborators.
Yeah. Per project.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So then our next tool is SourceTree.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well just talk about that a little bit. So with the first two, Git is the commands. GitHub is basically the server where you're storing your projects. I'm taking it down to the basic. It's not a server. Anyway, down to the basic layman term, GitHub is basically the hosting of your repos. Git is the commands that you actually run. You correct me if I'm wrong. And normally I am, so...
Well, it's the commands in the file structure, so...
Right. Okay.
It's similar. There's like Git file that stores kind of, and the storage, I guess, too, of what all happened in your project to make it what it is today.
Okay. So both of these, we talked about those. Bitbucket, very similar to GitHub. Then you have the graphic user interface. So a lot of tools out there are up and coming tools for using Git to GitHub. To private Gits, because you can run your own, you can put your Git projects up anywhere, really, just as long as you have Git installed on the server or wherever you want.
I don't even know if you need Git installed on the server. I think it's literally just...
You do if you want to run those commands
that
on
sucks.
That server.
Oh,
so like,
okay,
you know,
gotcha.
So if you have a shared server somewhere or anything, and most of them have Git anyway, but when you terminal in, you still need to do the Git init.
Yeah,
so
okay,
if it doesn't have that, you won't be able to get it. So SourceTree is the next tool, and it's basically a very, graphic user interfaced tool for Git.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Yes. We're looking at a picture of it right now. It has the push, the pull, the fetch, the merge, the branch, tags. You can do about whatever you want with it, and it's free. That's one thing that's good about it.
Windows and Mac, which is always lovely.
yes, and that way your team can work on whatever they want.
Yeah.
There's some other tools out there. So I was using what they call GitX, and there's another one out there, and I can't recall right off the top of my head. Try to pull it up here real quick.
On Windows, I used to use WinSisket, I think it was called.
WinSisket?
Or TortoiseKit, one of the two.
TortoiseKit.
It gave you the commands you could right-click on any folder and get, like, you could say git commit, git push, just by right-clicking on folders.
Okay.
It was pretty nice. I just use the command line, though.
Yeah. I mean, most people do use the command line when they start using Git. So that, you know, I mean, that's the most common thing. Again, like Travis iterated earlier, if you are not using the command line for anything...
At least get used to it.
Yeah. Write these. And these commands for this Git isn't... They're not bad. They're like three or four words. You not know, really. Like Git
add. Net.
Yeah. Yeah. Git add.
Flash.
Yeah.
Origin master.
So they're nothing out of the, you know, crazy. So get used to it. That's if you're going to be on web, you're going to have to know it. So we talked about those three. So source tree, GitHub, and Git. I have no idea what that next one is.
Oh, that was OhmyZSH. That was something that Scott uses that makes Macintosh terminals look nicer. I don't know much about them. Like, it gives you extra information about the folders you're in.
Oh, really? That's it?
Yeah. I've been on a Mac for about 3 years now, so I'm outside of the Macintosh loop.
Okay. So this was really, and it is looks like just a GitHub type deal where you download it and you have to bring it in.
Nice.
Yeah, so not really sure, and it has some themes and cheat sheets and stuff, but yeah, not really sure about that tool, but we'll move on. Cloud9. Do you ever mess with that?
Cloud9. I have a student that uses it.
Yes.
Which is a web-based IDE. It looks nice.
Yes. I have used it. A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not bad, but again, you know, it is pricing. You can have one or two projects as long as they're public.
Yeah.
You can use it.
It works off of GitHub, actually.
Yes. It definitely stores your projects in GitHub. You can bring them back, but I don't know if I really like the HTML editor, you know what I mean, like built into my web browser.
You don't like it?
So, okay.
I mean, it's essentially brackets in the end.
Yes.
It's all brackets. Yes. Is.
Yeah, it is, really.
Yeah.
You know, so, I don't know. That's just my feeling.
No, yeah, I think that it'd work well. It just doesn't look very good. That's the only issue with it is when I've seen it, it looks far too cluttered. And it's just very hard for me to focus on my code. My students had a lot of success with it when he's worked with it. It's actually pretty nice when you're teaching web development, especially when you're talking about like Ajax and all that stuff, because again, by default, everything is on the web.
Yeah.
But I think if I was going to be working on a project, there'd be enough configuration that I wouldn't want to have to wait to like upload things to this project all the time. And really, I wouldn't want to be reliant on it if I was working on like a corporate setting, right?
Right.
And my code should not be public. then I do not want to be working on Cloud9.
Yeah, I agree. So Cloud9, just to conclude, basically is an HTML web developing tool. Mm-hmm. So it's on the web.
Yep.
You have to, unless you pay for it, you have to host your projects on GitHub.
Yeah.
Public.
Yep.
Okay.
That's so nice if you just want to tinker.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, if I don't want to tinker, I'll go to CodePen.
Yeah. CodePen's probably a better solution anyway for small things.
Yeah. All right. So Liquid, what is that? Planner.
Liquid Planner. I don't know anything about that.
Oh, it's Planner, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that either. I've never used it.
It's like a UML tool or something like that.
Yeah. So.
UML. I've never used that before.
Yeah.
I really don't know. Is that a Gantt chart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. You like that? So basically, this looks like a tool that I think they were talking about mapping a big, larger project, weren't they?
Okay.
So they were talking about bringing that or, you know, trying to map other things out, drag and drop scheduling. But this actually looks more like a project manager's tool.
It does look like that.
So we're going to skip right over that. Neither one of us are project managers. Marked. I don't remember talking about this one either.
It's a markdown editor. I guess just a quick note on Marked. If you ever feel like taking notes and you don't want to deal with the heavy weight of like a rich text editor and you just want to work in pure text, learn Markdown. It's really very simple markup. of like, if I want something to be bold, I put two asterisks before the word, two asterisks after the word. And then there's a compilation step, and it produces an HTML file for me that has bold text instead of just normal text.
Yeah.
I use it for all of my class notes now, actually.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
So I can just bust them out, and then I hit Command-B in Sublime Text.
Nice.
It'll build... I've actually got a couple of build systems for it, so I'll build an HTML5 presentation if I need that, and it'll build a... It'll build a one-page HTML just site for me if I need that. And then if I really need a PDF, I can save that to a PDF for.
Huh. Man, that's really pretty cool.
Yeah.
You have to teach us that.
Sure.
Tutorial from Travis.
Yeah, wow. Get Sublime Text. Write some markdown.
Yeah, he was talking about this. A lot of book writers use it. Is this what he was talking about? Like, to a lot of
I could see
editors?
Some book writers using it. I don't know of any in particular that do.
Even the website says smart tools for smart writers.
Yeah, like it. The nice thing about it is that if you need to do a formatting, it kind of stays all your way. Like you don't have to ever move your mouse up to the bold.
Oh, okay.
Or you don't have to select some text in bold. But I guess if you're in a rich text area, you just hit Command-B and you've got bold.
So. Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
There's a trade-off there.
Yeah.
I like it too, so I can just focus inside of like, you know, Sublime Text. Put it into distraction-free mode, and I just write notes for a half hour. It's awesome.
That is pretty cool. All right, so that's marked.
Mm-hmm.
You can just search it for the web, and I think it was the first one I found.
Yep.
Okay.
Something else to call that.
Yeah. Okay, this should be have a couple others next to it.
Yeah.
MAMP, it is a very good tool to use. It just varies on what you're going to do with it. But MAMP is for Mac.
Yep.
Okay, they have WAMP, XAMPP, all this other stuff
for
Windows.
And I would recommend just go with XAMPP to begin with. If you need, like, the specialized builds of WAMP and MAMP, go for it. But XAMPP it's a server for any computer.
Oh, is it?
There's different downloads there. There's one for Windows. We've actually got one for Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Oh, cool.
So it has everybody. You just go get XAMPP.
So my question would be, like, a lot of people in today's development, so do they, with Node and everything else where you fire up these servers,
mm-hmm.
you know, do you really need to have these tools anymore?
Well, yeah. It depends on where you're deploying. So if you're working in a shop that still does a lot of PHP and MySQL, then it's very helpful to just have, well, I've got all this stuff running on my server anyway, so I know how to do this stuff. And then I deploy in the classic method of I've got a bunch of files and I FTP them up to a remote server and they run. I could still see that being there. Now, I'm certainly a little out of the loop, but I know a lot of guys who still work like that, for sure. But it does, at the same time, feel very heavyweight. Like, you install a lot of crap on your computer to get a whatever AMP server.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's I've always used MAMP.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's been one of my biggest things. I mean, loved it. And for the newer development people, there is some security issues trying to access. If you're trying to test a web page using mm-hmm. where it has mm-hmm. the file, you know, file colon forward slash,
yep.
trying to use that extension, there are going to be security issues.
Yeah, you can't do any AJAX stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's going to throw you an error. So you need one of these localhost type servers on your
computer. Maybe there is something that's said for the beginner just to be able to, like, okay, I know if I put it in HDOX and I go to localhost, it will work for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So highly recommend getting one of those tools, whether you're going to use Node or anything or any of these other servers
and get fired
up from the command line.
It's still helpful to have an AMP stack.
Yes. Yes. Very, very much so. The next tool actually is just a tool to reload the pages. So as you're developing, once you save, it's called Live Reload.
That's cool.
Yeah. So if you use like CodeKit or something like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, those refresh your browsers too every time mm-hmm. one of your less files changes or any other files change.
That's cool.
Basically, you just set a watcher on your files
uh-huh.
or your project, and if any file changes, it refreshes the browser's page.
Nice.
So, once you get in that old, you know, it used to be like when I was a Flash developer, you just got used to making a change and hitting the command mm-hmm. enter button, you know, to run it.
Yeah.
You know, you get that developing pages, you know, web pages, Command T or Control T back to your website, and then Control R.
Yeah.
So you got used to those command sets. This saves you a lot. So if you have dual monitors, you can your browser up and it just refreshes. So it is pretty cool. Definitely a good tool just to have. Composer. I'm going to bring up a lot of the next three, I guess, because they're all not similar, but they kind of do the same thing. Actually, there's probably three or four that we're going to hit on in here, and I don't even see one of them. So we have Composer. We have NPM, which is Node Package Manager. Grunt.
And Grunt's different. That was a task runner.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know why he's got that right there in between those two. Okay, so throw Grunt out. My bad.
We'll get back there.
Yeah. But then you have Homebrew, right? So Homebrew is close to a package kind of manager. So all of these, I haven't used Composer that much yet. We're getting ready to get into a workshop.
I've never used Composer, so.
Yeah, I think Composer is basically brings in the package dependencies, I think.
Okay.
So if you're...
And that's for PHP, right?
Yeah, but I think you can use those for other things, too.
Huh.
So I think...
Okay.
So I've only used it to set up Laravel.
All right.
Yeah. But I've heard people talk about it in other areas. But it's definitely a pack error. Basically, I call it a package manager because if your project depends on something, it's going to go get the package and bring it in, right?
And then alternatively, you can also run a command from the command line to download those packages.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you have NPM, which is Node Package Manager. So a lot of times you would be... NPM install MongoD.
Yep, and it'll go out there and install it for you.
Yeah.
I just did one recently. Oh, it was for Bower.
Yeah. Bower's another, yeah. So these are all homebrew, same thing. You would just be brew, install, boom. And as long as brew's...
Yeah, so as long as Brew's there, it'll download it, right?
Yeah, so if it's on their basically list of packages on their site, which they pretty much have everything, it'll go install it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hacks has one, too, called Haxlib.
Okay.
It's nice. Yeah. And I guess it's kind of interesting, like, new developers, maybe they're so used to it now, but back in the old day, if I wanted to say install... Oh, PaperVision, how about, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to use PaperVision in my ActionScript 3 project. Well, I had to go to PaperVision's site and find a download link, and heaven forbid I found the round download link. There was a high chance of that happening in the old day with PaperVision and a lot of those engines. And you download that folder, and then you had to go extract that code from where it was into your ActionScript 3 folder. Or if you wanted it for multiple projects, you had to extract it somewhere else and then go into your Flash editor and specifically set the linkage to say, okay, when ActionScript compiles, also look at this folder to see if there's any code in there and link that in as well.
Yeah.
It was a trial. It would take you sometimes a half hour to get that stuff set up. And now you just have a package manager.
Yeah.
So you say, npm install PaperVision, and it will install PaperVision for you.
Man,
it's beautiful.
You sounded like an old man right there. Remember back a long time ago.
Dude, I remember ActionScript 2.
Yeah.
I remember the transition from 2 to 3, and now 3 isn't even a thing anymore.
That's true.
Nobody even does it.
Oh, there's still some. I still write a little bit of ActionScript every once
in a while. I mean, they're catching up, right? I just read recently that they finally implemented Joypad support.
Okay.
That they've been promising for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And they finally have it. So it's coming back, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hope. I just like that, you know, the old, it works everywhere instead of having to worry about all my browsers.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Okay, so another... I'm going to skip over the next two because they're kind of languages.
Okay.
Or frameworks, I'm sorry, but frameworks of languages.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we'll get it. That's a whole other workshop, frameworks, I think.
Yes.
And some of this stuff...
Each one could be their own workshop, really.
Oh, yeah, easily. Backbone, it's Marionette here. So then let's... I don't even want to say it.
Visual Studio?
I don't.
You don't like Visual Studio?
I just don't. I'm not a Microsoft or any kind of guy.
Oh, man, you're a Mac guy. Is that it?
No, it's not even that. I'm not a big... Linux. I would work on Linux.
Oh, did you? Before Visual Studio?
Yeah.
I love Visual Studio.
Do you really? Why?
Oh,
what do you
man.
Like about it?
I like it because it's... One of the things I like about it is that they have like their own little code editor, and it actually looks pretty nice. Okay. It's pretty decent. What else do I like about Visual Studio? Now that I think about it, for a little while there it was super heavyweight, which was a pain in the butt.
Okay.
But the only other thing I like about it is that there's not a lot of C compilers out there.
Okay.
And this one, if I have to write some C, like I probably will never have to write C or C++ again. But if I had to, it's the most beautiful one out there.
Okay.
And from what I read, it's got a lot of tooling behind it to do that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like it's better than Xcode at writing C. It's better than Code Blocks at writing C.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Huh.
It's just, it's built for doing that kind of stuff. Like, yeah. That was Microsoft's bread and butter. I mean, they have their own C variant called C Sharp.
Right.
That you do all your work in there. So I played around it in a little bit, and it wasn't too big of a pain in the butt to deal with.
C Sharp or that Visual Studio?
C Sharp and Visual Studio. I made a Kinect application once.
So the one right below that, I mean, so...
Yeah, look at that, .NET stuff.
.NET stuff. So can you do .NET stuff inside of Visual Studio?
Since yeah, it is? Like okay. That's, I mean, that would be the original editor you would use to write .NET stuff in.
Okay. I'll be honest with you, I've never written anything with .NET, so always stayed away from it.
Yeah. You know what? Hilariously, there's probably an entire segment of web developers out there who make really good money writing .NET.
It's probably because it's so small. I mean, you know, when you think
it's very corporate-y. Like, yeah. If you're going to do anything in the corporate area, you're going to be using C Sharp, the .NET frame, the .NET web framework, which is actually like the little bit that I saw when I was I was TAing the class.
Oh, okay.
The class knew more about the stuff by the end of it than I did because I was finishing up my thesis then. the little bit I saw, actually, it was a very slick framework. Like, you wrote this markup on the front end. They would go back to this back end page. Mm-hmm. It was really nice for writing small stuff. That said, the .NET framework, until recently, did not have any sort of model view controller set up. So it was really behind the times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they were catching up. But yeah, .NET, if you want to make a lot of money and you don't mind working kind of like a boring setting and framework, .NET, man, it's an easy job.
It's where it's at.
Yeah.
So AppHarbor kind of goes right along with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about this. We're just mentioning tools that we brought up the other day.
Where .NET apps grow and prosper.
Yeah. So it seems... It's what a fully hosted .NET platform, so it's in the cloud, too.
Oh, okay.
So this is basically...
like cloud hosting.
Yeah, so, you know, most clouds are, you know, probably very similar to all, like, the servers, you know, the Apache kind of type servers. So this one seems like it's more geared towards .NET apps.
It was pitched as the Heroku of .NET.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's another one of those things where it'll spin up instances for you as you need them and then charge you a lot of money if you use too much processing power at the end of the month.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to skip right over that one. No, okay. I'm just kidding.
What is Xamarin?
Well, we're going to look that up. Also, the next thing, some of the tools that we brought in as well was... What do I want to say here? Prototyping tools.
Yeah, this one I wouldn't say is actually...
No, this one isn't one, but...
it's like a technology. It's like hacks.
Yes. So you build, you kind of write once, and it kind of compiles down to other... So we're talking about Xamarin? Is that what you call it?
I think it's Xamarin, yeah.
So it's a write once and deploy to many?
Mm-hmm. And it's another of those meta languages, I think. So you write once... I think, and then it becomes native Objective-C.
Yeah.
And then you write the same code, becomes native Android, Java, and so on and so on.
Yeah, so it says, write one shared C-sharp code base and separate platform-specific user interfaces also in C-sharp.
Mm.
But I think you can write them in other languages as well.
Yeah.
So Objective-C and Java. So, kind of cool. We don't know anything about it.
That was not a tool set.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That we knew too much about.
Yeah. Sounds to me like if you want to create some mobile apps or something for multi-platform stuff, maybe check it out.
Yeah. Also, check out Hacks because Hacks is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never...
I love Hacks.
And Travis does some tutorials on it, so check it out.
Yeah. They're so out of date now. Do not check out my tutorials. You will get lost.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about... So Emmett's another one of those deals, like, you know, something else, like a frame. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like a,
yeah.
I guess it could be a tool, I guess, plug-in.
Yeah, I need to play around with it. It seems like... Well...
It's definitely... So it's a shorthand for HTML and
stuff. My worry... And this puts me in, like, that weird situation of, like, I would love to use it, but I know that I would keep it installed and start using it in class, and yes. My students would get so lost.
Yes. Yeah.
So lost.
And, you know, and so that's one bad thing. So can you... Here's a pondering question.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get lost? So, again, I'm just going to reiterate. Emmet is basically shorthand for HTML. You don't really type all the tags out or anything.
Yeah.
You know, A and then whatever it is, the syntax. I've only seen it, wrote Hello World one time.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't speak of all the shorthand codes. But I think Jade is kind of the same.
Okay.
Same thing. But can you get to the point where you're writing the shorthand so much you forget about a lot of, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
The proper... format.
I was thinking like, yeah, like that would do it. What if you went to a place that doesn't have Emmet?
Yeah.
You have to like type it out and you'd just be frustrated and it'd be annoying you. And I was thinking like, how much time does it save to write like a few of those? Like I can bust out HTML pretty quickly now.
Well, and then a lot of editors. So like Sublime Text, let's say, you know, it already has the code completion.
It does
so,
do a lot of completion. Yeah.
Yeah. I can write, you know, less than A and then great. Boom. It's,
yep,
it's already got my A tag closed.
Yeah.
So I don't know anymore with these editors with code completion. I'm not sure that's any faster.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe in doing some of the nesting things.
Yes. Like if I wanted to make like 6 LI tags.
Yeah, yeah.
Emmet might be a little bit faster.
Yes.
So it might be really good for like a web designer, I would say. Like a guy who types a lot of like just static front-end code. For me, like... Probably when I'm dealing with data, if I have to type LI, close LI more than once, I've done my job incorrectly.
Yes. Use Angular or something.
Yeah. Or, you know, at least something should be within a for loop at that point.
Exactly. Spit back the code.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's Emmet. Definitely just check it out. It's basically the flavor of the month. The next one is Balsamiq, spelled with a Q, not like the vinegar stuff. So this is basically a prototyping tool. That was kind of not a hot topic, but a lot of people did talk about prototyping. And now this one does cost money. And I think it is right around $70 or something. Yeah, $79 for one user. And basically it is just a prototyping tool for you just to go in and lay out. It's really pretty nice.
What do they call it? Wireframing as well?
Yes, yeah. Wireframing. Yep. I've used it for a couple things. Actually, when I first used it, it was kind of nicer for iOS than it was for anything else.
Hmm.
You know, so I don't know. Kind of, you know, it just seemed like they had more of the iOS looking objects.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
nice.
You know, but anymore, they're going to. I mean, everything is in the mock-ups or the prototyping tools. So you have Android, and you know what I mean? They're bringing more Android and a lot of other tool sets. Plus, with some of the tools that you see now, like a lot of people writing PhoneGap apps, you know, so they're changing the styling of all together, you know, of what your apps should look like in general. You know, instead of having the standard iOS back button up at the top.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's what I'm getting at.
They're always going for something that looks like their brand anyway.
Exactly. So anyway, Balsamiq, prototyping tool. Don't want to get too much into it, but because literally that'd probably be a class in itself, but just check it out. It's good for you to do prototyping. We have time for one more. And so that one is called Aptana. We talked a little bit about it earlier. I did. And I used it for a free editor. I thought it was really robust and really, you know, pretty good.
It was way too slow last time I used it.
It's because it's Eclipse. It's based on Eclipse.
Oh, well, that's why.
Yeah. So Aptana is based on Eclipse. If you never used Eclipse, then you probably have never been in the web dev industry very long. A lot of tools are built on Eclipse.
I didn't actually touch Eclipse until I came here.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used a lot for Java and then... Flex was built on
Java application I ever wrote, I wrote in Sublime Text.
Oh
my gosh. That was I wish I had an IDE for that one.
Yes, there
Java
you go.
Java needs an IDE.
It does. But Aptana was a great tool for free. it does about anything you need out of the box. No plugins needed. Themes built in. You know, which some of the other ones have themes built in as well, but just try it out. That's all I'm saying.
You know, my question with them too is I always wondering, like, how do they plan to make money with theirs?
Aptana?
Yeah. Like, they have, like, a premium version or something, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe a corporate. Plus, they have, they're now part of AppCelerator.
Oh, okay.
So, cool. Which did Titanium, which is the mobile.
Gotcha.
That makes sense. So,
what about your other favorite one?
Oh, yeah. So, my new flavor. and going back to the JetBrains for that app code, JetBrains is a company that has a lot of products, and one I've been using lately is PHP Storm. So I will iterate this. If you're looking at WebStorm, which is their HTML, JavaScript, CSS editor, just pay the few extra dollars. Well, a few, I say probably 50. Actually, it's not that much, $30. Get PHP Storm because it takes all the WebStorm and gives you more
nice.
On top of it. You know, especially I want to get in the Laravel frameworks a little bit more. But it has a lot of built-in stuff out of the box, cool. You know, but a lot of plug-in driven too. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, ton of stuff. But I'm also doing some Angular stuff, and Angular inside of PHP Storm, beautiful.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Plus, is it like built-in code ending or something?
Yes.
Wow,
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And one of the things I do a lot of less in SAS, and they do have a less in SAS compiler right inside there. So you don't need the extra
tool. Oh, wow. That's
tool.
Cool.
Yeah. And I don't have to go into the terminal and, you know, set my watcher or whatever.
Speaking of code hinting for Angular, I think the Microsoft's Visual Studio does that kind of stuff too.
Oh, really?
I've never actually tried to code JavaScript and HTML in Visual Studio, but I think that it does that stuff because they're heavily invested in that area now.
Yeah, and, you know, now that you mentioned that, we had a guy there at the meetup that said that he thinks a lot of the app development for Microsoft is going towards, like, basically creating your app using HTML and JavaScript. Mm-hmm.
Your Windows Phone 8 apps right now, you can do that. Windows 8, you can certainly do that.
So, I mean, that's kind of cool. So I checked into a couple TV apps because, you know, I did a Roku app, and then I was looking at doing stuff for Samsung and LG and stuff, and there's a couple TVs that you just basically write your app in JavaScript.
Cool. That's really cool.
So, yeah. So that is pretty neat. But, so PHP Storm, I like. That's why I like. It's like any of these other tools, Aptana, Sublime. I don't. Does Brackets do this too? But all of these had built-in terminals.
You know, I don't know if Brackets has it built-in or not. And okay. Sublime's terminal is kind of finicky too.
It is finicky. One thing I like using the PHP Storm terminal for, and I'm sure this is just like Aptana or anything, when you click on the terminal button down at the bottom, it's already in the project.
Yeah, that's, you know, very handy.
Yeah, so you don't need
to navigate
into
there.
It. Yeah, because if you're doing a lot of JavaScript development and you're new to it, a lot of times you'll just want to install these big packages per project.
Yep.
So don't get caught up in, oh, where am I doing it globally? Because if you're just trying stuff out, you may not want to put it global and leave it. So,
and then it's there until you reformat your hard drive.
Exactly. And then if you do it global, you won't be able to use it until you set your path, usually in your bash file.
Huh.
Your bash profile.
That sucks.
Yeah. So
actually, the thing that'll get you there is when you deploy that to another node server and you forget what packages you have installed.
Yes.
That kills you.
Yeah.
That kills you.
So that's pretty much all the tools that we had talked about at our last meetup. A couple things. We didn't mention our sponsors.
Yes.
That we did. So I want to say thank you to The Basement Design in Motion.
They hosted us this time.
They did host us, yes.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
We I like want one of their cups. Next time you go, steal me a cup.
You want one of their little
dwellers?
Their dwellers are pretty good. They call their little logo a dweller.
Yeah, like the basement dweller. It makes sense.
Yeah. Great company. Interactive company. Do motion graphics, web,
everything. They were just in... No, that was... Or what was that? No, I think it was Plow.
Don't confuse our sponsors here.
I know. Plow isn't even... I thought the basement was just in the New York Times.
I'm not sure who was in there. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. But the basement definitely does great interactive
They do
work.
Amazing work. They yeah. have an app out, actually, in the iOS store.
Yeah.
A whale something, if I recall.
Yeah, they... Yeah. And they also just wrote a book.
Did they?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's on Amazon.
Man, they're all over the place.
I know. A lot of... They have great great people over there and working and do a lot of stuff. Also, the next sponsor bought us pizza.
Yes.
That was awesome.
A lot of pizza.
It was a lot of
they
pizza.
They love us.
But we tried to put it away.
We actually did pretty good. There are only three pizzas left. I think each of us ate one pizza a piece.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think one guy, though, may have ate two. Anyway, and that sponsor is BAM.
Bradley and Montgomery.
Yeah. Great guy. You probably have more a little bit of interaction with that sponsor.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of the guys that work there. Yeah, they're a good company. They work there. They're based here in Indianapolis. Always looking to do very cutting edge, interesting work. They're heavily invested, actually, right now in HTML5 games. Yep. So,
and if you remember, if you listen back to our first ever podcast.
Yes.
Alex Porter from BAM.
That's how much they love us. They let their workers leave work to come record a podcast with us. So BAM is the most awesome company. Take a look at their work as well.
Yeah. Now you gave away what time we really record this. Some people may have thought we'd done this at 2:00 in the morning.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So now
I'm actually
it's in the middle of the
day.
I'm
thinking about just how boring of a car ride would it be to listen to us talk about toolkits for an hour.
So, yeah, a lot of people may want to kill themselves.
We need to liven it up. There needs to be explosions in the background or something.
I agree.
Something.
Yeah.
Next time, though.
You want to, we'll put some explosions. Yeah, yeah, maybe we have a button set up.
Oh, I like it. Like a soundboard?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We've got a keyboard sitting right out there in the studio.
Yes. You're the music guy. You can play the keyboard.
I'll try to
get chopsticks.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure I can go through the glass though and hit that.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So to wrap up today, we appreciate it. We appreciate all of the organizers. So not just me and Travis is the organizer. Scott Williams is an organizer. Taha and Todd Isaacs.
Yes.
I want to say thanks to those guys. Dev Workshop wouldn't be possible without those. And it really wouldn't be possible without our members.
It really wouldn't.
Yeah.
All 250 of them.
Yes. Yes. 250. You know, that's not too bad compared to where we were. We just started this less than a year.
Yeah.
So not doing too bad. Also, Dev Workshop's doing planning and looking forward to a great new 2014. So
dude, there's some cool stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Good, cool workshops. Looking at some other new features for Dev Workshop beyond this podcast. I mean, this podcast is cool, though.
This is a new feature, too.
It is kind of
a
new
feature. It might die. This might be the last one.
No, I'm going to keep it going.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, hopefully this isn't the last one for you, Chad. So, anyway. All right. Well, we appreciate everybody... listening to this, we hope you didn't swerve off the road or anything.
Yeah.
You know, and wreck.
And anger.
Yeah. So, anyway, all right. Well, till next time.
Yep. See you around.